Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. Very exciting. Very exciting day, actually, because I like it when I have someone on the podcast who actually kind of very inspiring, you know, and when you have someone who's very inspiring on the podcast, you kind of like look at your life and go, yeah, God, I could change this. I could do that. And the person on the podcast today was very much that person. I've said person a lot now. Elizabeth Day. Now, Elizabeth is, I can say this, she's a good friend of mine now. She has an amazing podcast called How We Fail. She's written lots of different books, but her most recent one is How to Fail, which I'm reading at the moment. My friend introduced me to. I went her on her podcast and chatted about life and loads of different things, and she repaid the offer very kindly, came onto mine, and we sat for the last hour and just chatted about the most incredible things about her life and about what she's learned. An amazing woman. So you're going to really like this one. Francis is not here again today. He's moving house. He's doing lots of different things. So you just got me, my little solo little self, which is always good and fun because I just get to hang out and speak to you. Yeah, you, Gemma, who's listening right now. Don't know if there's a Gemma, but I'm guessing. Anyway, enjoy the podcast. Please review and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Private Podcast, and also send us a mail. Really, really want to receive a letter. Just any sort of letter, anything at all. S... 79-81 Borough Road, SE11DN, and sign it Jamie, or Francis, or Private Parts. Anyway, team, here is Elizabeth Day, who I just simply adore. Enjoy. So I've realised something recently.
What's that?
Well, I've realised that when I was younger growing up, or when I was like in my, I think still in my 20s, now that I've reached the ripe old age of 30... I can't go out on the weekend and eat badly.
I've had exactly the same thing.
Wow, I'm bloaty. I'm bloated all over the place. I looked in the mirror and I was like, my face is enormous.
It's not. You don't look bloaty.
No, I definitely am.
But
I think
I've had a weekend where I don't normally eat that much meat.
Mm-hmm.
And for various reasons, I've been on the road. I sound like a rock and roll star. I've been on the road. I went out with friends who chose like a meat-heavy restaurant.
Wait, hang on. What do you mean? A meat-heavy restaurant?
It was literally just like, it was meat and halloumi. That was the menu.
Where are you eating? Like in a Brazilian
kebab,
barbecue?
Kebab joint.
Out on the road, just getting kebabs and halloumi. So wait, so what happens when you eat red meat? Does it make you feel...
It makes my stomach really unsettled. Mm. I'm glad that we're getting into this straight away. So delicious for your listeners. It not only makes my stomach unsettled, it makes me feel unsettled. I think because I'm just not used to digesting it. And I get that thing as well where I normally love vegetables and fruit and stuff. And yesterday I was coming back. I'd done a literature festival in Bath. And
that is very rock and roll.
That is living on the edge, isn't it?
Wow.
It's about to get even more middle class, peeps, because then on the way back from Bath, I realised I didn't have any food in the fridge. So I stopped off at M&S, Simply Food.
Get out of town. Get out of town.
And I just bought myself a shed load of deli things that were all like chorizo slices, tandoori prawns. And I was like, I really just need a cucumber.
Yeah, but you can't do that. Are you on a train as well?
I hate eating on trains. I think it's really antisocial. So I didn't eat on the train, but I bought it at Paddington Station and I took it home with me.
We had... I eat on trains, which is, I agree that it's not a good thing. Yeah, I'm one of those people. And also, I eat chicken on trains, which in the nicest way possible, when you first open up a sliced chicken box from M&S, it smells distinctively like someone has released a fart from a packet.
I feel like it's got a spermy smell, chicken.
Like
people on the train are like, oh, there's Jamie Knight from Made of Jazzy just wanking off on the train. Yeah,
he's just orgasmed underneath the seat again, and it does this every single time. We had the best. It was Francis and I were on a train, and we were going to do one of our gigs that we did. We did this live tour. We were doing one of these gigs, and this girl, we were sitting in one of those four. You know when you walk down the train, you hope to find like a two-seater one, but you have to sit on the four-seater one. So we're like, fine. So we squeezed into the four-seater one, and the girl opposite us opened up her sushi thing. And to be fair to her, she said, "I'm really sorry. Everyone's going to hate me, but I'm going to eat sushi in this packed train in front of everyone." I said, "It's totally fine." Francis was a bit the other way and said, I don't want to do this. And so she was eating it. And then Francis got up and went to somewhere else to go and sit somewhere else. And that was fine. Well, then we started talking and all these different things. And she was really friendly and super nice. And we got off the train and I said goodbye to her and things like that. And she walked off. And Francis came up to me and we were talking about it. And he said, "God, I just really hate when people eat on trains. I really can't stand it." And I went, and I was walking forward and he went, "Do you know what, actually? It is so fucking rude when people eat on trains." And the girl turned around and said, "Well, thank you for telling me now." And Francis, I've never seen this melt more into the crowd. He went, "Oh, I didn't mean it." What else did you mean?
How awkward. But also, kudos to Francis for actually getting up and moving somewhere else. Because I'm way too much of a people pleaser. Even if I didn't like it, I would be sitting there just thinking, "No, it's fine. It's fine. No, please go ahead and eat your sushi."
Yeah. I'm completely like that. But
you're so close to the microphone that it's making me really paranoid.
Well, listen, I do it because Liam Gallagher does it in the Oasis, isn't it? Niall Horan. No. Is he the other one? Niall Horan and Liam Gallagher, the two brothers from the Oasis, who sing wicked songs. He leans on the microphone, so I've always done that.
Okay.
I don't know.
It suits you.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit different. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives in the studio or the room with us today, Elizabeth Day.
Hello.
Can I tell you one thing? I am so excited that you're here.
I'm extremely excited.
I'm also surprised that you decided to come on the podcast, which is fine.
I love you. I love you and I love Made in Chelsea. And you are on my podcast, Hatch Fair with Elizabeth Day.
Which is, if you... I tell you what, right now, pause this podcast. Go and listen to How to Fail by Elizabeth Day and listen to that one rather than this one, because it is such a great podcast. It really is. Because what you do, well, you can explain about it. What is the format of your podcast
That's so lovely of you to say that. The format is really simple, actually. I get each guest to come up with three failures in advance, and then we talk about them. So the idea is that in learning how to fail, you actually learn more about yourself, and you learn how to go forward and succeed better. And I think just as a culture, we're really scared of failure. And so opening up those kind of conversations and making people realise that failure is a fact and that everyone has faced it, even people that you admire from afar and that you think have everything sorted, they've also probably gone through really tough patches.
Mm-hmm. Do you think everyone fails, or do you think that some people don't realize it's a failure and go through? For instance, you know, do we just go, "Oh, failure is a good thing," because we, you know, you and I both have failed at different stuff, so it's easier for us to accept stuff that we go, "Well, we fail, but what do we learn from the failure?" Or are there sometimes when you fail and you get no happiness or learning or knowledge out of doing it?
I think that you can learn something from everything, and that doesn't mean that you have to be kind of Pollyanna-ish and like relentlessly happy and upbeat all the time when stuff goes wrong. It just means that I personally choose to assimilate sadness and to live with it and to choose to be at peace with it. But that isn't to say that I'm still not sad about the failure. So a real example in my life is my failure to have children. And I tried really hard and I had unsuccessful IVF and I had a miscarriage. And that's something that causes me a great deal of sadness. But I'm at peace with that sadness as well. And I also know that as a result of it, I've had many, many rich opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So that's how I personally choose to assimilate failure. But obviously, I speak from a position of privilege. I'm kind of white, middle class, and I own a laptop. So
that does actually, that does make you, when you own the laptop at the end and you eat chorizo from M&S. That's
I'm a living
holy
cliche.
Shit. Yeah, holy shit.
I mean, I'm just not being schooled by someone from Made in Chelsea. Come on.
I'll get ready for it. It is going to come thick and fast.
Jamie, before we started recording, was talking about how Elephant and Castle in London is an up-and-coming area. Now, it's meant to be very edgy.
No, you said it's up-and-coming, and I said I look down on it. That's what I said.
Good.
I went, hello. Yeah, so everyone in it, we just alienated everyone away from Elephant Castle. But it's interesting with you because... you know, you do. And it was, we did your podcast and I was super excited. We went to...
You were amazing. I know you don't think you were, but you really were amazing.
For some reason, I don't know, because in all honesty, I don't normally care about what I say. You know, I've done Made in Chelsea, which is a reality show where I've said and done lots of silly things and said and done some good things, but most of it very silly. And so I don't really care what people think of me that much. I do in certain ways, but a lot of people that I don't know, but people who I suppose I admire... And this is what I've worked out, actually. People that I admire and things that I really want to do well on, I really worry about doing well on it. So I came on your podcast, big fan of the podcast, huge fan of yours. And I then just chatted at you for about an hour. And in my head, I kept going, Jamie, you should probably shut up now. But I just didn't.
No, you didn't chat at me at all. But that's very sweet that you thought that you did. Actually, you asked me more questions than anyone who's ever been on the podcast before. And I think it's because you do this and you're such a natural interviewer and you're also naturally interested in others, which is a lovely quality. But then the whole premise of my podcast is very much to get people to tell their stories. So it's good that you were talking to me.
But it's an interesting tactic, right? Yeah, I'm just talking at you. But how do you... There's a few things, actually, first I want to find out. Actually, the first thing is when we did your podcast, because I actually... My friend Georgie, who, again, is a big fan of yours, she told me to... She said, you've got to read this book. You've got to read this book, How to Fail. And I went, okay, I'll read it. And then... What happened was is that then you asked me to come on your podcast when Georgie had told me to read this book. So I was like, fine, I hadn't read the book at that point and I'm reading at the moment. And we spoke about the fact that you couldn't have children. I had no idea that that was the case. But I sort of questioned you about it, said, well, how do you feel about, you know, you haven't had children? And you got really upset by it. And it really moved me. I was like, oh God, what have I done here? I opened up saying, but what is so amazing that you are so open and honest about stuff and you open people up in your interviews. That's what you do very well. But how have you always been open and honest, or have you sometimes been closed and then opened up? How did that work?
That's such a great question. And I haven't always been this open. No, it was actually a conscious decision that I made because I grew up... My parents are really wonderful, and we are also a typical English middle-class family where a lot of big emotional stuff is left unsaid.
And you just eat treats, though.
Sorry, you just eat treats.
You eat treats, though. That's what you
chorizo.
Just get. That's how middle class.
I'm so old that chorizo didn't even come on the scene until I was like 18.
You're not old. You're not old at all. Come on.
We just had sausages. We just had cocktail sausages.
Delicious.
And sausage rolls. But growing up, I also not only had that kind of family environment, but I grew up in the north of Ireland. So as you can hear, I've got a very English accent. And we moved to Northern Ireland when there was still effectively a civil war raging. There were bombs going off left, right and centre. And in certain quarters, being English marked you out as the occupier. And that's all a long-winded way of saying that I began to speak a lot less and listen a lot more. And I was quite closed off and I wasn't myself. And I found school really tough, and I ended up getting a scholarship to a boarding school in England. And as soon as I got to that, as soon as I got to that school in England, I was automatically accepted just because I sounded right, even though I didn't actually come from the same background. It was bizarre. And a bit like you, like I always wanted to please people. And I think that was a lot to do with starting a new school. And it was sort of sink or swim. You had to win people around.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Especially a boarding school, because you're completely on your own. And then that lasted into my 20s. And I was just this inveterate people pleaser. And I never took the time to sort of know myself. I kind of outsourced my sense of self-worth to other people, whether that be in romantic relationships or work relationships. And it was only really when I got married and then I got divorced in my mid-30s that I had this sudden realization that I hadn't been being honest with myself. So not only had I not been open, I hadn't been open with myself. And that was really the massive turning point for me, because I realized that my best friend Emma at the time said, it is so much better when you are real and when you're being honest about yourself, because I've been so worried about being this dark, ugly person. And actually, by being open and honest about the things that were going wrong and the shame that I felt about my marriage ending, it opened up this whole new lease of life.
It's so interesting, because I think that's what I think people have, that self-awareness is so key to suddenly realize in yourself that, you know, you have to sort of look in yourself and realize the issues and the problems and accept them. But it kind of, you know, you go back to when you were in Northern Ireland in the school and you weren't accepted because, you know, you were an introvert and you didn't want to speak because people were mean to you because you were seen as an outsider. And holy shit. I mean, growing up as a kid is really hard, but you kind of, whatever happens to you as a child, you kind of harbor to when you're an adult as well. And you must have then hated going to school every single day, and you must have really didn't want to do it. And because you weren't accepted, you must, and that's a really kind of terrible thing to experience. And did you not tell your parents that this was happening? You didn't tell anyone?
Oh, it was really tough. And actually, to this day, I'm so glad I'm no longer at school. I'm so happy.
I hated school.
Yeah.
Everyone said to me, school is the best time. No, it's not. School is not. This is the glory is. No, it can't be.
It annoyed me so much when adults would tell me that. I was like, what's the rest of my life going to be like? Because I'm miserable.
Yeah, am I going to be in a worse prison than this? It was so horrible.
I'm trying to remember now if I did. I ended up telling my parents, but I was also one of those children. I was very mature for my age. That's how I came across anyway. And I had an older sister, and my parents always encouraged me to like have an opinion and things like that. So I seemed very grown up. But actually, I was still a child. And I think it was that disconnect for me. I was like, I don't want to let anyone down by saying that I'm not handling this. But eventually, I did have to say something. And I left. I was taken out of school like halfway through the year. And that was really, it really did save me from myself, honestly. Because the school I went to in England, because I was immediately accepted, was really good for my confidence. And it was an all-girls school, and that was also good. And I don't know what would have happened to me if I just stayed in my old school and I just lost more and more confidence. Because it's such a key age. When you're
God, it's so
early
key.
Adolescence is so tough.
Yeah, it really is, and it's such a key age for development. I spoke to a really good friend of mine the other day, who I won't say it is, even though why would the audience know who it is, but I'm just not going to say who it is. And we were talking to him, and me and him are really close, and he's always had a bit of an issue with trying to be someone. You know, he sort of walks around in a certain posture.
It Alex Mitten?
It's not Alex Mitten. Alex Mitten doesn't care. About the guy's in Cuba at the moment smoking cigars in a car, I saw on his Instagram, but he's just the best. But my buddy of mine, he walks around with this like posture, and you know, when you used to get drunk, he used to, you know, get aggressive with people, and he's about my height, so he's a little bit little, and he was, you know, would be mean to strangers and all these different things. And we went away together recently, and we sat and chatted, and we got quite deep about stuff, because recently I've just quite like getting deep about things. I don't know why. And he said when he was from the ages of about 9 to 13, he went to a school and he was bullied. And he was bullied hard, and he was always slightly left out, and he was made fun of because he came from a wealthy background and he had a driver, and he would tell his driver to drop him off to like tube stops, so then he would get on the tube and pretend he had taken the tube. And at that age, it's terrible. And then, so it suddenly all clicked in my head that I was like, well, this is no doubt why you have all of these sort of anger issues and you feel like you have to pretend you're someone you're not in these certain situations. And, you know, he said that he walks, because he walks with this odd posture sometimes, you know, really straight back, almost like it's purposely done. And I was like, why do you, you know, that's why he said he did that, because he was small at school, so he'd have to try and make himself look taller.
Oh,
and honestly,
gosh,
broke my heart that so many people experience these things and they don't say anything the entire time. And you were the same, you just dealt with it.
So heartbreaking that.
It
really,
terrible.
What a story. I don't know how many of you will have watched Derry Girls, which is this incredible sitcom.
It's amazing. I've seen bits of it. Yeah, it's very, very funny.
I was basically the weird English dude in that. Like, that was my experience. Note perfect.
So sweet.
I was such a nerd. And because I also grew up in the middle of the countryside.
Wait, no, because you wanted to learn, or you liked learning, or you were told to be a rebel in a sense where you're like, you have to have an opinion.
No, I was really, I was good at learning. I was good academically. I loved reading from a very early age.
That's a death wish.
I know. And then I listened to The Archers from the age of four.
No,
and I wore corduroy trousers. I was honestly, I know it's hard to believe now, Jamie, I was a total dweeb.
Uh-huh.
And because I use words like dweeb as well. So by the time I got to secondary school, I was just a sort of... I was thrown to the lions. I had no idea. I had no concept of how I came across. And I went to this secondary school where there was like 1,000 people in a year. And I had a neon orange backpack. And
sick.
You know, I was just like, I didn't have it. And I loved Agatha Christie. I mean, can you imagine that in Belfast? What was I doing to myself? But yeah, that totally stayed with me. But you know what's interesting is that I think it gave me an enormous amount of drive.
Yeah, completely.
Because I really wanted to prove myself. And I really wanted to prove all of those people who'd underestimated me wrong. And I still have that. And it's interesting that we're meeting on Monday, because Jamie and I were at the British Podcast Awards on Saturday night where...
Furious.
We are both absolutely raging about the fact that we didn't win.
I'm fucking annoyed.
I think it's good to claim one's anger, and I'm fucking annoyed too.
Yeah, but you should be more annoyed because you should have won it, and that's not me trying to buddy you up or anything like that. You actually should have. Honestly, I told you the story. So to all our listeners, basically, we British Podcast Awards, you know, you get nominated for whatever category is, you know, from anything from best entertainment to best interviewer to best branded. And you go into this auditorium, you have drinks before, and all the different podcast people. And if you're a podcast fan, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit like, oh, there's you know,
Chris, Joan and Jerry.
Joan and Jerry. Yeah. And there's
Fern Cotton.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's Cotton. Oh my God, I listen to you every week. It's quite nice to sort of have that sort of moment with people. Anyway, you sit down and you have you wait for your category to come up, and you have five nominees. And then out of the five nominees, they do a gold, silver and bronze, and the last two don't even get mentioned. So
I know.
So there's definitely you definitely know who's last and second last pretty much. So anyway, Elizabeth's category came up, which was best interviewer.
Yeah, I was actually in two.
You were in two. Sorry, yeah, she was in two.
Not that I'm caring.
She likes to brag about that. He likes to brag a lot.
How many were you in, Jamie?
Elizabeth had to send me a message other day going, how many categories are you in? I went, oh, I just want you in. I'm in two. So the categories came up and so Elizabeth's one came up and you'd already not won in one category.
Yes, all right.
Yeah,
so and I'd presented an award, which is kind of even worse.
Yeah, you had a triple threat going on. Yeah. You were presenting the award and you won two categories and you won Sweet Fuggles. Yeah. So actually, you're the bigger loser here. So anyway, your category came up for Best Interviewer. And honestly, hand on my heart, if you haven't listened to our podcast, go listen, because you do it in such a gracious way and you open people up. Metaphorically, and you, it came out and they said bronze, and it wasn't you. And I turned to our producer, a guy called Pete. Next thing I went, she's got this. Elizabeth has got this. Silver, someone else. Here we go. If I was a betting man, I'd bet my house.
At this stage, I'm now thinking, I've got it. Maybe I'm probably in with a chance.
So it comes to the gold. And the great thing about the podcast awards is when they read out the winner of the gold, before they read out the winner, they mention what the judges thought of the podcast. So best interviewer, here we go. It's going to be Elizabeth Day. They get up on stage and gold is to someone we think outshone everyone in the category by a million miles.
And then they're like, with their empathy and their gentle coaxing out of people's vulnerable stories. And again, at this stage, I am not an arrogant person and I didn't think I was going to win, but I was like, at this stage, I was like, I mean, that is me. They are describing me.
And then I, at this point, turned to Pete Strauss, you know, and empathy, you know, they just charisma. It's just, like, oh, you know, this, I turned, and I didn't even, I just gave him that knowing look. We went, I didn't even say it, but I sort of thought and telepathically said to him, told you so. And then it came and the winner is, it wasn't you. Which means that you came either last or second last in the category.
I know. And I was just like, okay. I just carefully rearrange my face. Start clapping.
Yeah, yeah. I was furious. When our category was called out, Best Entertainment 2019.
Who even won that one?
I have no idea. And I don't care now. Yeah. I don't care. Anyway, it went bronze, silver, and then it was going to go. And I was like, fuck, we're going to do this. We're going to do it. We're actually going to do it. And then they called out the winner, who I don't know. And I went, what? Out loud. Huh? I've waited 2 hours for the second last one to find out that I haven't won. And everyone else had gone.
I was sitting next to Fern Gosson, who was absolutely lovely. And she was up for one award and presenting one award. She presented her award. Her category was then announced. She didn't win and then she left.
Yeah, yeah. She was out the door in a heartbeat, which I would have been as well if I had lost. 100%. If I don't win it, I'm out.
But I think part of the reason that I mean, we're joking about
Are you going to try and defend yourself now?
No.
Look, I'm only kidding. I'm not that annoyed. Getting our coffee downstairs, I am furious.
I am annoyed, but I'm not. I'm seeking an explanation, which is that I think it dates from those school days of A, wanting to prove myself, but B, wanting to be part of a group and wanting to be accepted.
Completely.
And podcasting for me has been an amazing experience because it's a very accepting community, both in terms of the generosity of listeners and also meeting people like you and like hanging out with other podcasters. It's so lovely. It's a very supportive environment. So I felt like at that award ceremony, I was like, I'm finally with my people. And then they just fucking rejected me.
Yeah, I'm finally a leader. But it's funny how you say that, because it's very much a community, this podcast world. And that's what I love more than anything. You know, we started Private Parts as a podcast where it was just chatting amongst, you know, Francis and whoever. And it wasn't even where we were interviewing people. And then I realized that very much had a ceiling. So I was like, how do we expand? But interviewing people and meeting people, firstly, what I love about it, you've been a journalist, you know, all your life. Literally all your life, you've been a journalist. Yeah. And we're going to get into that. But for me, I've always loved people and I've always thought people were super interesting, and that's how I've always gained knowledge. I never got it through books or education because I just couldn't be bothered. But I could be bothered to be making friends with people. So I was very good at sport and I wanted to be good at sport, so I was good at sport. I was very bad at education, so I didn't want to do it, so I didn't do it. I wasn't bad at it, I just wasn't interested. But I was interested in people, and so I would listen to people, because then if I listened to them, then they would probably like me, because I was engaging with them, and that's how I sort of gained knowledge, and that's still how I gain knowledge now. And for me, firstly, you probably felt the same. Interviewing a podcast, especially one-on-one, is a tricky thing. It's not easy, especially if you get someone who's a bit, you know, tricky to interview. But also, it teaches you a craft, and you just learn so much about the human psyche, and that's what I really love it. Plus, we're in this community, which you said, of the podcasters, and yeah. Everyone's kind of helpful with each other.
I totally agree, and I think one of the keys to any good interview, but particularly podcasting, is listening, which you do brilliantly. I know you were joking earlier about talking at me, but you do really listen, and you make something flow like a natural conversation, which is an amazing skill. And yeah, I've learned so much doing what I do with failure that it's super interesting now, because I do, as you say, have a book out. And I've been going around the country promoting it and eating chorizo from M&S Simply Food
in your
outlet.
Yeah, but you demanded a tour bus, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Demanded that
just
tour.
Just a bowl of blue M&Ms and some chorizo slices. But I, often in the Q&A after I do a book event, the questions are all about someone going through a particular life challenge.
At that moment in time?
Yes.
Okay.
And they will ask for advice. And it's a very beautiful thing that someone is willing to share their story that way. And I'm extremely honoured by it. And I also worry that I'm not worthy because I'm not professionally qualified. But I always find that I do have things to say. And then I realised yesterday that that's because I have learned an enormous amount, exactly as you were saying, from the people I've spoken to. And in a way, I probably have spent much more time thinking about failure and what it means and what resilience is and how we operate separately from our thoughts and all that sort of stuff than a lot of people. So, and that's purely been through talking and listening.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. There are, I remember when, I think it's because we, you know, each individual has been through a hard time. So if you are, you know, if you're a painter, you'd love to talk about art and you can talk about that. If you, you know, my mum loves to talk about her kids because she loves her kids and she, you know, she was just one of those mums who did. And you know, with someone like you who's, you know, you had failure and been through different things. And same with me, who we spoke on your podcast about, I had anxiety and stuff like that. I really find that connection with people. And I love to talk about it because people are going through certain issues that I can relate to. I go, oh God, I know how you're feeling now, but I know how you can feel in the future. Yeah. And you really want to help them because your kind of inner soul comes out and you realize that it's a horrible thing that they're feeling at the moment or whatever it is, and they're going to get past it. And that's why I think it's quite kind of, we like to talk about those things.
I think life is about connection. And if yeah. I'm connecting, that's all I can ask, really. But I'm really interested in you as someone who...
Are you just flipping this around?
See what I'm doing now.
You're going to try and... It's so funny. This is what I said to Elizabeth again, is that it's really weird. We're so used to interviewing other people
yeah.
that when you then are being interviewed, you're kind of a bit like... Hang on a second.
You're a bit rabbit in the headlights. I'm like, what? I don't know what I think.
Yeah, I don't know what I think, but I know what I'm going to ask you next.
Yeah.
Okay, ask the question, go.
I'm really interested because we've spoken in the past about being people pleasers mm-hmm. and that idea of, as you say, learning from other people and connecting with other people. On Made in Chelsea, how difficult is it then when you're not encouraged, but there's like a storyline which is about you not liking someone and them not liking you?
I think there's a few. I think firstly, in life, you have to develop. And whatever way that is, you have to learn, you have to develop, and you have to grow in certain ways. And whereas before, if I had an argument with someone, I would probably fought back or bit back or design. In fact, it's not the right way to behave and do things. So I kind of learned that way. Main Chelsea's, I don't, for some reason, I'm such a people person, but I really care about what my friends think, and I really care about people I admire, or even more so maybe than my friends. And that was actually another issue that I want to talk to you about as well. But when it comes to people that I suppose that I think I don't really. It's like Marmite with me sometimes. If I don't think I care about them that much, I don't mind saying something to them. So it's very weird. Yeah. So it's very funny. My friend said to me, you know, when I was breaking up with my ex-girlfriend, he was like to me, I said, oh God, I just can't do that. I was having a real troubling time with the whole situation. He said, Jim, it's so interesting with you. If it's something to do with business or it's something to do with someone else, you're straight. That's how it is. But when it comes to this side, you're so weak. And I went, I know, because I just don't want people that I care about to dislike me. And it, as we spoke again with you, it goes back to that whole situation at the beginning when parents got divorced, my nanny left, I was sent to boarding school, and all of that separation I then harbored for so many years. And so I was so worried about abandonment. I was so worried that if I rocked the boat with an individual that I loved or cared about, they would then go, actually, no, I don't want this. And then that manifests itself onto different things where, you know, I won't, someone will say to me, oh, Jim, you want to come to my birthday party? I know I can't come, but at that moment in time, I can't let them down because they won't like me. So what I'll do is I'll say, yes, I can come, but in the future, no, I have to find another time to let them down in a different way, whether it's an excuse or whether it's that. And it's the worst way to be, but for some reason, that is the only thing in my system that I can't quite get over.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much stuff, but for some reason, that is my one tick, my one bit where the fact that I care too much about what people think and I worry about them. But then on the flip side of that is I don't really care too much. Maybe I would do if someone I don't know doesn't like me. I don't mind too much.
That's so interesting because I think that's the key to ultimate enlightenment, because I think I started out in life, and it's taken me a really, really long time, and I'm still not there, just caring what everyone thought of me.
Did you get every single
person? Everyone.
But being a journalist and being a novelist, that
nightmare.
Is... nightmare. Yeah, because your work is about being criticised.
Exactly.
In positive or negative, right?
Yeah, especially because I've been a journalist during the time that this thing called the internet has really taken hold.
So what were you before? Did you have a typewriter? When you?
Basically, it was just like a quill pen.
I thought so.
And a quill. Slave boy who like wrote it. It chiseled it into a piece of slate.
You used your abacus just to...
I do sound like I'm making myself sound like I'm 95 years old. I'm really sorry.
Elizabeth Day anyway. Is 140.
But I basically lived through the era of online commenting, and I used to work for the Guardian Media Group, and that's ferocious. That's got a ferocious online commenting community.
But why? Because...
Because I think it's because a lot of people who read The Guardian or The Observer probably know a lot because they're intelligent thinking people.
Okay, fine. And they like to comment.
They like to comment. And therefore, when you get something wrong, there's nowhere to hide. Nor should there be. That's right that I'm held to account. But then you also get people who can comment anonymously who are kind of bitter that you have a platform and that you're writing this thing and who a lot of the time are really misogynist and like, you know, how dare a woman raise her voice in this way.
You didn't have that.
Oh, massively. I got accused of everything from having sand in my vagina to...
Which everyone always thinks. Why would someone comment?
Is that why I didn't win the British podcast?
Yeah, because I heard that Martha on the bed, she has sand in her vagina. Why would someone comment that? What is that? What is that a meta? What is that suggest?
I think they were trying to imply that I was humorless and dry. Like I was literally like
straight over my head. I would. So many people have said so many things about sandy things to me, and I've gone, well, I haven't been to a beach, so you're the idiot. I didn't realise they were suggesting things. Wow. I also love the way that you presented that. Well, I assume. I would, if I had to think about it, it would probably be that...
Sure, they have their reasons.
You knowing as well that one. They went, well, I would think that... So you had all these comments, these negative comments, and that is terrible that as a woman you were kind of ridiculed... Just because of your sex?
Yeah. And loads of women in public life get that. Death threats, everything. It's really a massive issue. And I don't...
Still now? Yes. Has it changed, got worse or got easier or what?
I think it's changing. And I think that's because people have become so much more aware of it being a visible problem. Therefore, people are more likely to call it out. But I still think that there's this kind of, latent... bubbling hatred in our society for people who have the temerity to exist outside the box that other people feel comfortable putting them in. So, and I think that's particularly true with women, and it's particularly true with people of colour, and it's particularly true if you're in any sort of minority space. So that's something that I think is extremely important to tackle and keep talking about. I've got really deep and serious. Don't we?
No, no, I know. No. Honestly, please. The serious, the better. Because this is what we've realized on this podcast is that perhaps we. I really want to now drift into tackling interesting subjects, but possibly with a light and humorous way sometimes. Yeah. And this is what we've been trying to do, and this is why we're getting talking about these different things. But for you, right? This is what I find so funny is that you cared so much about what people thought. You were, and you became a journalist, and because that sort of is writing about other people, so you could connect with other people, but then also other people can comment on your work as well. So you're kind of harboring everything that you desire about being liked and being connected, but also people liking you. And do you think that's a subconscious thing, or you just generally just like journalism?
I think it's both. I got into journalism because I've loved writing, and that's all I ever wanted to do in my life was write books. And I thought that journalism was a good way towards that, to kind of hone that skill. But I do think that on a subconscious level, I was seeking outside approval to an extent where I would never be sated, because you can't please everyone all the time. And if you are, then you're not producing anything of worth.
Yeah.
And it's been a huge...
Because you're not being risky, you're not pushing boundaries.
And you're not, and you're not being true to yourself. And actually, great art or a great piece of writing or a great piece of television should provoke strong opinion. That's its job. If everyone is sitting around not really having an opinion, then it means it's mediocre. And so that's how I've sort of come to deal with that. But I also have very practical measures of dealing with it, in that I no longer check online comments. I don't read my Amazon. No, genuinely, Jamie.
Absolutely, you don't.
I don't.
So your new book came out, How to Fail, and you didn't check any of anything, comments, anything like that ever. There's just no way. I don't believe you. You would have had a glass of wine and gone, oh, fuck it, I'll just have a quick meal.
Maybe I've skimmed through, but what I don't do it anymore. I did that because what I realised that I have some 5-star reviews on Amazon, and also inevitably I have a 1-star.
That you haven't read.
And no, you see, this is why it's bad, because I'm going out seeking the bad stuff, scab that I need to pick.
But because that's how you're built, like me. We go towards the negative, even as mine. I remember the time we had an unbeaten rugby match in my midgets. I still remember it. Midgets, which is my first year at Radley College.
So
it was
midgets.
We called them midgets.
That's so it was not acceptable anymore, Jake.
We called them midgets. This was our team was called midgets. Yeah. Okay. Actually, come to think of it, we'd never looked at their way. Yeah, that is terrible. They shouldn't be called that. But the first year, the first school, the first A-team rugby team in the first year at Radley College, 5 years, so you go from 14 to 18. Your first rugby team is called the Midgets, Midgets A, Midgets B, Midgets C. And I was a Midgets A, and we had an unbeaten season, but I didn't score a try in the last game, and so my whole season was a disappointment, because I hadn't done that. Mm. We always go towards the negative.
Totally.
But there was a passage in your book that I read that really related to me, and I can't remember what it says. And it's at the beginning, but you say something like... I drifted from something. I went from friends to friends. What is the you talked about?
I think that was about relationships. But I would always be in a romantic relationship, and I would have lined up the plan B for if that relationship went wrong.
Did you do that?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
And it's because I was terrified of being alone, and therefore being forced to look at myself and think, you see, you're not worthy. But if I was with someone, then that would be a sort of manifestation of the fact that I belonged and that someone wanted to be with me. And actually, of course, that was never sustainable, and it never made me happy. And I wasn't fair to the people I was with because of it.
Oh, two things here. The first thing,
Jamie's trying to be polite to me. That wasn't it.
There was a quote which you said, I drifted from friendship group to friendship group. And you said, I don't know what the evidence, but I want to talk about this relationship thing. But you went from,
Yes. Okay, so that, I think, maybe when I left school in Ireland and I went to school in England, I approached my first day at school as if it was like a Machiavellian exercise. I was like, this is how I'm going to survive. It's like, I am going to befriend the most, I'm going to identify the most popular girl in my class and I'm going to befriend her, and that way I'll be okay. And that's exactly what I did. And
same,
I was
same
totally
as my friend.
Fine.
Yeah, same as my friend, what he did, he said, oh, I'm going to make sure that I'm not the one who's left on the step again. But I...
Was it that passage?
It wasn't that passage either.
Oh, so you know my own book.
Yeah, I do. No, it was just, it talked about, because it was, for me, what I realised is that you always lined up a plan B. You're always looking one step ahead. You're playing a game of chess with your life, in a sense. You're going, right, this, I'm going to make this move in this person, but, oh, I need to protect myself a bit later on and do that. And what I realised with friendships, and I think I told you this, is that I, being selfish and things like that, I realised that I would make friends with people and very close connections with people, but then I would go and do something else and find someone else who, and it was always about me admiring people, so whoever I admired, because I suppose I lacked a paternal figure in my life. I lacked a father figure, so I admired male authority. I admired people who were in strong male. That's why I've always been friends with older people, guys. I've always sort of admired them different ways. But I realized that what I was doing at 20, I remember 27, we were going, I had been parting off and I had jumped from sort of different friends and things like that. And I remember we were going to the south of France to film out there, and it was the night before. And I remember sitting there and thinking, God, who do I phone? I've kind of just jumped from one place to the next and I haven't really settled, and I've kind of neglected a lot of my friends. And friends are like gardens, you have to water them to make them grow, right? And I didn't realize that. And I'd been internally selfish for so long. And suddenly I had to go, oh, shit. And I suddenly had to just start reconnecting with all those people that I had sort of just let down along the way without even thinking about it. And that was the moment in my life where I was suddenly like, oh, shit, I can't behave this way. But with you, with your relationships, do you think... and how do I put this?
Delicately.
Because...
do you think you were a massive whore?
But you were... You obviously, you know, you were incredibly... are incredibly intelligent and very beautiful. So did you know that you could attract anyone you wanted to? And so when you say... In a weird... Does that sound really...
No, that sounds...
So you said, I can meet this one, but I know that I can find... someone else.
So opposite from that. Like, thank
really?
You so much for saying that. That's a lovely thing
God,
to say.
God, I was hyperventilating as I was saying that.
No, that's an incredibly... What a compliment. I never, ever thought that about myself. And don't. So actually, I was extremely insecure, and it was all about, for me, like, oh God, someone else wants to be with me. Thank fuck. Let me go out with that person now for at least 2 years. I never.
Did you have a timeline on it? Did you say it right?
No, I'm making it sound slightly more strategic, but it was that thing of it was almost like, oh, I can't believe this person wants to be with me. It was all, and it makes me sad saying that now, because I look back and I think, what a waste. And not that I regret any of it, because it was a journey I had to go on to understand myself, but I feel like it was slightly pathetic as well. I mean, I would be in relationships and someone, my boyfriend at the time, would say something like, where do you want to go for lunch? And I'd be like, I don't know, where do you want to go? I don't mind. Let's go wherever you want to
you're
go.
You're just being a girlfriend. You're just being, yes, you didn't have any, but that's
exactly.
So funny. But coming from such a place, and we've got to get onto my diary, because otherwise we're pushing your time. I'm so sorry. But
no, I love it. Can you just sure? Say it forever? God, let's do Joe Rogan.
God, let's go for 8 hours.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
2 weeks.
Oh, here we go. God. But it's so funny, because you went from a place where you read all these books about empowered women, and you were in places about, you know, told by your parents that you had to have an opinion. And then you went all from that kind of place where you were smart and were told these different things, but then went to a place where you had no voice and you just accepted.
It's such a... Well done. Well done. To doffing my cat, interviewer cap to
you. Let me just
you,
really unpick you.
That's an amazing observation, and you're absolutely right. And I think this is part of my divided self, in which at school and professionally, I've done well.
That's the thing, right?
So yeah, so I could do exams, but I never thought it was because I was clever. I thought it was because I was like, oh no, I've learnt and someone has taught me how to do an exam well and how to write an essay well. I didn't think it was like innate intelligence. And then work-wise, I knew that I could write. These were all things that I saw as slightly separate from myself. They were things that I did. Me as a person existing in my personal life, that didn't translate. That modicum of confidence didn't translate. And I didn't have confidence in me as an individual, aside from what I did.
because you didn't have the answers. When it came to exams, you had answers. And so you knew, you revised, you learned it, you knew the answer, and so yes. Fine. But then, weirdly enough, because you would have done English, I assume, and you would have done... You didn't. You're shaking your head.
I did English, yeah. A-level, but I did history at university.
Your favourite colour is purple. I know
everything. You know me so well.
Right, on that note, we've got to quickly get onto my diary, because otherwise okay. We're going to be running on. This is a real twist of conversation, but as we like to do in private parts, here's my diary. Sunday. Also, Woody, I've written this sitting next to a person who writes for a living, so please critique me any way you want. I won't read the comments, though, like you.
Will you feel like a failure as a person if I critique your writing?
Nah,
like I would.
Won't care.
Because you don't respect me. I get it. You don't respect me, so it's fine.
Look, Liz, I don't admire you in any way. You are merely cattle to me. You're cattle... And you have a bit of a following, so I thought, well, whatever you say goes in one ear, yeah. Out the other.
And you only admire men, that's yeah. The other thing.
You only like men. I hate women.
Fine.
Sunday. Actually, weird on that, I actually admire women more than men, because I grew up with three sisters who were just the best.
And you speak very highly of your mother
on
the podcast, which is a really lovely quality.
Well, just because I just realised that, you know, but she was just such a strong lady. Anyway, Sunday. I had an adventurous but slightly scary Sunday. Adventurous because I went to watch my friend Rob run in the Hackney Marathon. And scary because I went and watched my friend Rob run in the Hackney Marathon. I feel like as soon as you enter East London, you're there. There is a height restriction. Everyone needs to be slim and over 6 foot. You have to either have a tattoo or a piercing. Both are welcomed. And skinny jeans are the preferable dress wear. Thank God I was able to show off my cool Peter Pan tattoo. It's the third time I spent a day in Hackney, and I feel part of the community, part of the family. I arrived at the marathon to the onslaught of runners. I didn't quite know what I expected, but there were so many runners running. It's a marathon. I managed to get myself to mile 11, where I was to meet my group of supporters supporting our friend. My group of supporters? Sorry, I have a group of supporters who follow me wherever I go.
Just a crowd that claps.
Yeah, just cheers me. They just clap and hand me pims. I finally found them smiling amongst other supporters. I was across the road from them, blocked by a sea of marathoners. It's the word marathon, isn't it? I shouted, waved hands, screamed their names, but to no avail. They couldn't hear me. The only way to get to them was to wait for the optimum moment for a gap to appear and dart across the road like a whippet. The moment came. I braced myself and went for it. I darted, dived, dove like a jack-in-the-box, erupting through the runners with ease until I came to the last moment, and out of nowhere, a runner who had been giving his all for 11 miles came at me and crashed straight into me. I looked at him. He looked at me with pure hatred. I looked at him back, embarrassed. He got up, looked again at me and said, "I always thought you were a cock."
Oh my God!
Ouch. The biggest jab I've ever had from a man I've never met. Sir, whoever you are, I'm sorry. I couldn't believe it.
Stop, that's...
I always thought you were a cock.
Also, he must have been panting by that stage, but he found enough breath to say that.
Exhausted. He's exhausted. hey, Elizabeth, that's the end of part one, but we still have another part to go, which is a little bit shorter, so don't worry about it.
Can't wait.
See you in part two.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.